more than pleased to do this.
Let's start with green IT. That's something that has really been a focus of the new administration in particular. Talk about what is happening at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission regarding green IT, cutting energy, and so on.
Well, there's quite a few things going on, actually. We've just recently bought 10 large VM servers and hope to virtualize 40 to 50 of our small servers and applications, both in our production and our test environments. It gives us a lot of flexibility, will allow us to have things fail over in case we do have problems, and overall just reduces the footprint in the data center because we'll be reducing the number of servers we have in there.
One of the things that various IT people have talked about when it comes to virtualization and cloud computing, and I'll ask you about cloud computing in a moment, but is not as much technical as it is territorial. Some IT folks have gotten kind of attached to their server farms, and they like the idea of being able to go and put their hands on these things themselves, and it gives them kind of a sense of control. You have to give up a little bit of that when you move into a virtualization environment or cloud environment. Have you had any issues with getting your team to get on board with the virtualization concept?
It varies from program to program here, but we definitely have had a sense of, what do you mean I'm running on the same server as X, Y, and Z, and what happens if X, Y, or Z crashes? And so it's as much an educational thing as it is a territorial issue. On the other hand, some of the newer programs that we'll might talk about later have been very open to the scalability that the virtualized environment gives them and our ability to bring in more resources if they need it. So there's definitely selling points also.
What have you done to address that educational process? Because that's, as I said, something that agency after agency runs across, this mindset that is sometimes pretty hard to break.
Thankfully, we have some successes to point to on the virtualization front where it's applications they're aware of, it's stuff they use every day. Our SharePoint environment is running on virtualized server. So we can point to the successes there and the fact that we're able to offer a very robust environment with scalability that we can't offer as efficiently, at least, with standardized servers.
Is it fair to say then that you've had success with the model of kind of starting? When I say starting small, I don't mean as far as importance of the programs, but giving people an opportunity to see that, yes, this will work, and I can, now that I've seen it be successful in this environment, I can see where it'll be successful in my program?
And that'd be a perfect characterization, because we started in our test environment. We've got a fairly robust test environment that, to the extent practical, mirrors production for people to pre-position their applications. So we started there, and then we rolled it out into less critical production applications.
Now, virtualization kind of goes hand in hand a lot of times with cloud computing. Have you looked at the cloud or done anything with the cloud yet to see about moving in that direction?
We're just now exploring what you would consider cloud computing. We are involved in some of the e-government initiatives, so our learning management systems hosted off-site. So depending on your exact definition of cloud, that might be one example. But we're also in the process of standing up an availability system, sort of pushed by the pandemic effort and being available for that, but it's an employee availability where we can actually phone home to the employee's home and say, you know, the building's closed today due to a power outage, you know, here's what you need to do, recording their contact information and stuff. And we also want to have discussions with some of the apps.gov folks, Google in particular, on email. I'm not sure it's a viable candidate for us, but I'm very interested in looking at it.
When you look at those applications, what are you looking at to decide whether they are going to be viable for what you need them, whether it's for Coop or anything else?
Couple of things. Ease of transition over to a service like the availability service that's offered by a major telecom vendor. We have an in-house system, but the maintenance issues, the robustness of it, some of the security issues just aren't there for us for long-term use. And this communications vendor offered system has all of those. And since it is in the cloud, it's very easy for us to stand up. There's no application testing on our end. It's a lot less work. On the email front, if we were to move to Microsoft or Google or some other offers, outsourced email into the cloud, the main hurdle is going to be they have to be FISMA certified, and our computer security organization has to buy into that certification.
Now, another group of applications where there already is quite a bit of guideline out there for you is Web 2.0 applications. What is your agency's Web 2.0 policy right now, whether it comes to information that's agency to citizen or whether it's doing business within the agency?
The best description I could give you is in development. We realize we have mission applications that we're going to have to engage Web 2.0, but externally we haven't done a whole lot yet. We are investigating using RSS feeds off of our public website, and we have a mission need to use Twitter, actually. FEMA is using Twitter for emergency response and incident response, but internally we've done a little bit more. We have I already mentioned SharePoint has stood up, and SharePoint has a lot of collaborative tools built in Office of My Site for employees to use so they can personalize their presence within the organization. We're using a product called Tomoya for communities of practice and knowledge management, but we're still really in the early stages. We hope to have, leveraging the GSA policy and agreements that are out there, we hope to have our external use policy finalized within the next 3 to 4 months. Again, there's security issues, as you probably know, and we want to make sure we address all those before we open up the services to all our employees.
And you kind of anticipated my next question. Some agencies are just using the GSA terms and conditions as kind of stock T&C and moving forward with those. Some agencies, it sounds like yours is one of them, that is taking a look at them, using them as more as a starting point, and then, well, we might want to add our own on to those to make sure that these suit our needs.
Correct, and that's the approach we're taking. We're making sure that it fits our security profile, which is a little different than other places I've worked in government, and making sure we have acceptable use policies in place well in advance of deploying to everybody in the agency.
Let's talk about thin clients for a minute. Thin clients has gone from something that nobody was talking about doing anything with to becoming one of these buzzwords almost right up behind cloud computing and virtualization. What's your situation there? Have you started to test thin clients? Are you implementing them? Where are you there?
I like this topic. It's very interesting to me. With the FTCC security settings, which controls people's desktops, access, and settings, the local PC is so locked down these days, I see little need for the majority of our users to have a full-blown desktop. And we have tested thin clients with embedded XP in them, so there's really nothing there to maintain. There's no data loss that you can expose yourself to. They're very cheap to deploy, and they work well. In our environment here, we have a large Citrix farm where we serve up the majority of our applications through a two-factor authentication from the outside into the NRC internal network, and it works well. There are some hurdles to overcome with the thin clients, however. The memory footprint, if you start using lots of applications, they seem to not be able to support simultaneous use of many things, but that's part of the learning curve and why we're in the testing phase right now.
Talk about the financial implications of thin clients for your agency, too, because that's one of the reasons you mentioned technology first. Some people go to the financial aspect of it first when it comes to thin clients.
Now, I'm also intrigued by the financial aspects because we pay a set price per seat now. We have got a seat management contract, and I think moving, say, pick a percentage, 40 to 60% of our staff to a thin client is going to significantly reduce our hardware investment over time. They're probably a third of the cost of a business class machine that we're putting in the offices today. Not to mention the long-term support costs, because the configurations are much easier to maintain.
I want to dig into the mindset again, because that's another thing that people have raised. We talked about that a little bit earlier with the server farms. What's the end user at your agency who comes to their desk and sees that all they really have is a monitor and a mouse and a keyboard? There's no box there anymore. Is that disconcerting for people, or do people pick up on it pretty quick and understand the efficacy of it?
I don't know that we have enough experience here with the general user population, because the pilot's pretty small. We have a secure LAN environment that's air-gapped from the outside world, where they use that model, and those people are fine with it, but I don't know that I can take that experience and apply it to the general NRC population yet. And that part of the story is yet to be written. We're going to hopefully be there soon.
Is that something that is important, or is that something that you think can be worked around pretty easily just by saying, listen, you're still going to be able to get on the network and do the job that you've always done? It's going to be a pretty quick adjustment period, do you think?
I think it will be a quick adjustment period, especially if we start with there's some thin client. They're not really laptops, but they come with an embedded XP system that you can take on the road and act just like a laptop as long as you have connectivity, either through a wireless network or an air card. And I think people, once they use them, will go, oh, this just works. And I don't really – not that we don't want them to secure it and keep it safe, but if it does get lost, there's no data on it.
We've talked a lot so far, Mr. Boyce, about some of the general IT priorities across the agencies. What are some of the IT priorities that may be particularly of interest at NRC because of the mission of your agency? Somebody at another agency might not think of as being a priority.
One of our big priorities right now is what we're terming enterprise content management. As a regulator, we perform our mission very open with the public. In fact, we have a imposed 6-day metric. If we take in information from a licensee on a license application, where possible, we turn that information around and post it on our public website within 6 days. So enterprise content management is trying to look with a broad brush at everything we manage here, whether it's on your local desktop, it's out on SharePoint, whether it's an email, or it's an official agency record in our document management system. We're trying to move that into the 21st century, as it were, from an old file-based system such that we have management tools. Wherever we touch data, it's actually actively managed, and we can easily apply workflow to it in the background. So that's one of our largest priorities right now.
Talk about the methodology that you use, because a 6-day turnaround on what I imagine is a pretty heavy volume of information is pretty impressive, as other agencies are being asked to turn data around quickly in the transparency effort that the new administration wants.
Well, we work with our stakeholders quite a bit to pre-identify which information is going to definitely be shareable. And it does undergo internal review, but I think engagement with the stakeholder community is key here, so we know what data we're taking in. And then, of course, we're turning it around and making PDFs out of it, but we're also adding metadata to that so the public can come in and find that information quickly based on certain search criteria. But I think the magic is engagement with the stakeholders and them understanding how we do business on their behalf.
Has it been difficult historically to get the stakeholders involved in that process, or is it easy for you to show them how it's to their benefit to be ready to help you produce this data?
I wasn't here when they first started it, but my sense is that through regulatory processes and just the fact that the public has a huge interest if there's nuclear material being transported cross country, or if there's a plant in their backyard, or if there's a waste repository site going up, they realize that the only way that they're going to be successful is if they go through the public hearing process and get acceptance. So I don't think it was a tough sell.
Every federal official that is at your level and is concentrating on the IT operations of an agency has a list of things that keeps him or her up at night. What's on your list?
Oh, it's the usual stuff. One of my keep me up at night is that, for me, it's actually a balance between operational security and enablement so the staff can do their mission effectively. We already mentioned the social media stuff. The one side of me would just love to turn on social media and Twitter right away, but the CSO organization, rightfully so, goes, oh, wait a minute, let's make sure we're doing this in a safe, secure, sound manner.
I know we talked a little bit earlier about the GSA terms and conditions and talked about where you are in the process of doing that. Are you confident that you can get that social media to a place where it is secure so that then you will be able to say, now I can feel really confident about letting my people really go into this full bore?
Yeah, I think we're developing a technical approach such that we can deliver up access to YouTube, Twitter, other social media sites in a safe, secure manner. It's just realizing we've got to quarantine or firewall them off in such a way that they're accessible, they're usable, but it's not full and open access from the desktop necessarily. We've put some controls in place where you're being routed through a secure path. So, yes, I do believe we'll get there soon.
I had a conversation with Karen Evans not too long ago, and we were talking about the whole concept of projects that make the news, and we were both kind of lamenting the fact that successful projects, successful pilots never make the news. On time, under budget never makes the news because it's just not that exciting to people. But I'm interested in those stories, and I'm wondering if you have any of those you can share about what you've been doing at DNRC.
One of our big initiatives, of course, is building the oversight process of building new nuclear plants. We have 17 applications in-house right now. And we've set up enterprise project management server on our virtualized environment, I might add, to serve as the hosting point to control all work, construction oversight, regulatory oversight of those processes. And that's a big success because if you realize we really haven't put online any new nuclear plants in approximately 20 years or so, 30, that we've been forward thinking, we've set up this process to manage all aspects of the work, you know, down to an hour of a reviewer's time in a fairly short order and integrated it with SharePoint and document collaboration, I think is a huge success for us. In fact, we would not be able to manage our workload without tools like this.
And that actually anticipates my next question, which is what ways are you using technology? Think back maybe to what the agency was trying to do 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Went before some of these revolutionary changes have happened. And if you can, just talk a little bit about the impact of technology in general, or if you want to pull specific examples.
A couple things here that we do I think are fairly unique. We have an enterprise information exchange where, referring back to our public openness, we work with the public and any stakeholder who wants to come in through our adjudicatory process. And we have an externally facing application where you can file basically legal documents that you, a citizen, have signed and submit into our process without ever coming to the NRC doors, which I think was very forward-thinking. And that was deployed probably 7 or 8 years ago initially, and it has matured greatly since then. In fact, that's another success where we recently upgraded the forms process to make it even easier for the public to use, to make it, you know, less of a burden on them at very little cost. I already mentioned our enterprise project management process, and I referred back to the new construction. We're looking at ways to use handheld devices in the field to enable our field staff now, as they put up construction trailers at these sites, to give them connectivity back into our document repository, things like that. I'm hoping that's an early success next year, but we're focusing a fair amount of attention on that.
You mentioned handheld devices, and we've talked about security, but as soon as I hear those two words put together, security is the first thing that pops into my head. What are you working on in the security realm to make sure that when you introduce those handheld devices to the network, that they're not going to introduce any little gremlins into the system?
We're fairly locked down in that respect. We synchronize and manage centrally all of our handheld devices, so we don't actually allow you to come back into the office and plug that device into your local workstation, but they're managed over the air. So we really have a good management scheme there where we're very, very little exposure on our part for using the handheld devices. And we're following the same method of deploying a new realm of laptops where you've got the laptop in the office, you can take it out into the field somewhere, and every time it connects, you know, we're going to scan it, make sure it's secure, make sure it's up to date, and it's quarantined off until you're allowed full access into the home network.
Mr. Boyce, I'm grateful for your generosity with your time today. Anything else we should know about the IT shop at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission today?
Just that we have a great opportunity coming up. We're going to be building a new building, and we're looking at that data center to be a model. The builder themselves wants it to be a LEED certified building, which is a government-wide green term. So I'm excited about that opportunity. There's lots of new things we're going to put into that cogeneration where we're actually generating our own electricity, recapturing the heat to cool and heat the building and run the data center.
What's the timeline on the new data center?
We're hoping late 2012 to have that building open for business.
Where's it going to be?
Right next door to our existing facility here at White Flint Metro. So we've worked with the county and GSA to put together a first request for proposals and then a final solution to not only meet the county's needs on smart growth, but a very green aspect also.
As time progresses and you know more about it, I would love to get back together with you and find out more about what you're doing to get that going.
That'd be great. We're interested in sharing, too. In planning for this, we certainly went out and visited many existing data centers to try to grab those best practices ourselves.